guest tonight is Brandon Turberville. He comes back to the show again to discuss some, well, various scandals and some current events. Brandon is a writer and a geopolitical analyst. He has authored 6 books, including Codex Alimentarius, The End of Health Freedom, 7 Real Conspiracies, and The Road to Damascus, The Anglo-American Assault on Syria. He's also the host of Truth on the Tracks, a weekly news roundup that airs every Monday and Friday night at 9 p.m. on the UCI Network. Hey, Brandon, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Tim. I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. Thanks for coming back. Listen, you posted a couple of articles that caught my attention recently. One was regarding the Hastert scandal, Denny Hastert, the former Speaker of the House, titled Hastert Allegations Open Window to History of Satanic Ritual Abuse of Children. Now, that angle isn't being covered in the press. We know about rumors about him playing hush money to a apparent victim of his predations back in the 60s or 70s when he was a teacher. And this grew out of a financial scandal. He was caught, I think, structuring or making unauthorized or lied to the government about his withdrawals from the bank, which was like $1.7 million. But you wrote this article. So what's your take on this whole Hastert thing and how it exposes maybe a wider, more deeper, much more disturbing history or reality to America's political system?
Yeah, well, to be clear, I'm not accusing Hastert of any satanic ritual abuse himself. Mm-hmm. You know, the article was titled "An Open Window" simply because this is another sexual abuse scandal, which brings us back to Hastert's history. He's had a history of this sexual abuse stuff, and we can go into some of this in some detail, but this opens a window not only into other, you know, past sexual abuse scandals in Washington, but when you start looking at sexual abuse in Washington, D.C., you can't ignore the fact that it's connected to some much deeper things, and I've covered that in the past as well. That meaning satanic ritual abuse and how pervasive it is through the political systems here in the U.S. and even across the world, but especially here in the U.S. Now, you've already kind of referred to what Hastert was indicted over. He was indicted on charges that he structured bank transactions to avoid triggering red flags, and he lied about those cash withdrawals to the FBI. He was indicted essentially because of the cash withdrawals. His indictment had nothing to do with the sex scandal, and apparently he was wiring money to an individual to the tune of $1.7 million to keep this person silent. And this was a person that's known only as Individual A. These transactions took place beginning in 2010. There's a couple mentions of other victims. I think 2 more victims are mentioned in the reports, but they obviously their identities are not being revealed. This Individual A that's spoken of was apparently a student at Yorkville High School in Illinois, and that's the high school where Hastert was a teacher and a coach back in the 60s and the 70s, and apparently he was sleeping with this student or having sex with this student. And Hastert was a teacher, obviously. So the student was, a teenager, and obviously this is not quite the same as, you know, an 8-year-old or something like that. Some people have wanted to make that case, but this is still obviously extremely inappropriate, and this is a person who's using their position of power as an adult, as a teacher, as a coach, to coerce these underage students into bed with them. So at the very least, this is extremely inappropriate and abusive in its nature. So what we had, Hastert went to court, and the federal judge overseeing the case is U.S. District Judge Thomas Durkin. And Durkin gave a protective order, which Hastert's legal team requested. They wanted a protective order granted because this case has sensitive information, according to them, and they have, quote, privacy interests of third parties, end quote. Judge Durkin granted that protective order. It's essentially a gag order. It keeps this information from coming out. And I want to point out that Judge Durkin was once a contributor to Hastert's campaign fund, and he actually considers himself friendly with Hastert's son. That to me is a conflict of interest, but nobody seems to be batting an eye here. Now, When I referred to Hastert's past in terms of sex abuse scandals, we remember that in 2006 there was this Page scandal. They called it Pagegate, and this was the Congressman Mark Foley who was molesting young boys. This Page program, where young boys could enroll in this program and then act as couriers and kind of be shadow the congressman and so forth. Mark Foley was molesting these boys. It was a scandal that broke out in 2006. This was a scandal that Hastert, we're going to say mishandled at best when he was involved. Hastert had apparently been told about Foley's sexual abuse with these boys at the very latest, months before these allegations came out. But reports were years before he knew that these things were taking place, and he did absolutely nothing. And we had reports, for instance, that the Republican staff that was working for Denny Hastert warned the group of pages that came through in 2001 and 2002 to stay away from Mark Foley. And that was 5 years before the allegations came out in the public. We also had former chief of staff to Representative Tom Reynolds from New York. This is a guy named Kirk Fordham, who was the chief of staff, says he warned Hastert's chief of staff about Mark Foley 3 years prior to the allegations coming out. And, this is what we have a consistency that people are saying that they reported these things to Hastert. We even got John Boehner, the Republican House Majority Leader at the time, and saying that he told Dennis Hastert personally about the Foley issue. Now, Hastert says Boehner is lying, but if you think about it, we have two prominent Republican congressmen, and one of them is lying about an investigation into a child sex predator. So what does that tell you? I mean, somebody is obviously covering something up there. We've also got Hastert's staff being informed of the Foley emails, these emails that Foley, explicit emails Foley was sending to these kids. He was informed of those emails a year before the allegations came out, but where his staff was, and he just says his staff never told him that this was happening. So there's this trail of information that he was repeatedly warned over and over about Foley's behavior. Now, again, this Kirk Fordham, who was the aide, said that he had alerted Hastert's office about Foley's behavior and had conversations with the Republican leadership as far as 2 years before the allegations came out, even 3 years before the allegations came out, and where he reported acts that Foley was behaving inappropriately toward these pages. Had more than one conversation with senior staff with the House Republican leadership and asked them to intervene, and they never did. After the allegations did come out, we saw, as I said, Boehner was claiming that he told Hastert, a number of other people were saying that they told Hastert, essentially it was a bunch of rats jumping ship. So, we had, again, John Boehner, we had Tom Reynolds coming out and saying that he had told Hastert about Foley in 2005. So it seems like a lot of people dumped the knowledge about this thing on Hastert's lap. He was never prosecuted or anything for not doing anything, but he and a few other congressional leaders went before the House Ethics Committee in 2006, and they were deemed willfully ignorant. But they weren't punished because, apparently being willfully ignorant of sexual abuse doesn't require punishment in the House of Representatives. But after the allegations of the Page scandal had come out, Hastert went on to Rush Limbaugh's radio show, and his defense was that the Page scandal was some type of Democratic Party conspiracy against Republicans because the scandal had hit right around the time of elections. And it's interesting that it did happen around the time of elections, but the fact is that it was happening clearly. And I just want to point out to anybody who thinks that Hastert might have been the target of a unfair witch hunt or anything, this guy has been an enemy of civil liberties since day one. He supported the Bush administration claims that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and that they were that Iraq and Saddam Hussein were supporting Al Qaeda. Hastert helped push through the Patriot Act, the No Child Left Behind Act, the Homeland Security Act. He supported the drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. All these things. Remember, if anybody has lost their post office recently, it was Hastert who pushed through the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act, which requires the post office to fund health care benefits of retirees as far out as 75 years into the future and within a 10-year window. So this is something that no other corporation or business has to do. This is the reason why the post office is in such financial straits. And that's what earned him the name Hastert the Bastard, which I refer to him as that in the article. So again, just to mention that we had reports come out by Wayne Madsen of Wayne Madsen Report, and he did a lot of information, a lot of digging around the time of the PageGate scandal regarding Hastert and a few other congressmen, and he pointed out that Hastert was well known in his Yorkville, Illinois area as being a sort of a predator with these students. I mean, again, what happened was. Hastert had run for Congress. He was running for state level representation agent. In other words, a state representative office in Illinois. And his, again, he was well known for his inappropriate actions with male students, and that there was lots of rumors around Yorkville about how he was interacting with these students, and that a lot of people believed that the school system was helping cover up for this. So he ran for an open seat in the Illinois House of Representatives in 1980, and he wasn't doing very well. But the sitting Republican House member that he was trying to get the seat from, he had a stroke, and he couldn't run for re-election. So they selected, after he had lost the election, the individual who had the stroke and didn't run for office, the seat was vacant, and so the Republican Party of the area decided to put him as the replacement candidate. And then he was there for about 6 years, serving as a representative. And then they had Republican Representative John Grotberg was nominated by the GOP for the second term. He was diagnosed with terminal cancer and actually went into a coma. So the Illinois Republican Convention selected Hastert as the replacement on the ticket, and which was in a heavily Republican district, so that was essentially an election to the U.S. House. This is not one but two political predecessors had massive health issues right before Hastert was either wanting to take their seat, or they had these issues, and he was essentially placed in the seat, in their absence. So there, in 1989, there were allegations about the Franklin cover up, which we can talk about a little bit later. And Hastert was actually an individual who had honorable mention. So he was, if you look through the book of John DeCamp, I don't think you see the name Dennis Hastert anywhere. I don't think that he came up officially in any of these reports in the courtrooms, but with the individuals investigating, apparently Hastert's name was passed back and forth. Just another interesting thing about Hastert's history. In 1995, when Hastert became the chief deputy whip under Tom DeLay, he was able to move up yet again due to the fact that that there were another different types of scandals taking place with Dick Armey and another of those guys, Richard Armitage. So this is sort of a pattern in Dennis Hastert's leadership and throughout the years, actually going back sort of to the 70s. Now, there's also the question of the inappropriate trips being made back and forth to Southeast Asia by Hastert. And we have Hastert and a couple of other congressional leaders and staff members going to Southeast Asian nations and the Northern Marianas. That came under the scrutiny of the House Ethics Committee, who was investigating the PageGate scandal. Right, this was Northern Marianas was a this is part of the scandal involving Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff, because this was essentially a place that was using slave labor. Right, Asian children were also being used as prostitutes here, and it's interesting. It's funny. You see this happening all throughout the Franklin scandal as well. But Mark Foley was a co-chair of the House Caucus on Missing and Exploiting Children. This is a person who was exploiting children. He was in charge of investigating that in the Northern Marianas. Hastert had visited Vietnam and in April of 2006 spent 3 days in the country. He was there with Representative Ray LaHood. And he had canceled a visit to Thailand and Vietnam in January of 2006. So he's been back and forth to these Southeast Asian countries in interesting proclivities that he's had, that you'd have to wonder why he was there in these places that are known for their child prostitution and slave labor. Now, again, there are no official allegations regarding those Southeast Asian visits, but that's something that you tend to want to point out, that whenever he canceled these visits, it was because of the fact that the PageGate scandal was coming up. And so a lot of people are wondering whether or not that had something to do with it, if he was trying to hide something. So one of the other issues here that I think is parallel to the Franklin cover-up is the Bush connection, right? We also have a Bush connection with Hastert. Because we have the St. Petersburg Times reporting in October of 2006 that a lot of the top Florida Republicans, including Governor Jeb Bush and a few others, were well aware about the Mark Foley PageGate scandal that was taking place, and they did nothing. So Bush was actually very supportive of Hastert, and he was also very supportive of Charlie Crist. When Charlie Crist was questioned about whether or not he knew about the scandal, Bush was very upset that candidates would have to answer questions about whether or not they were involved in any type of sex scandals involving children. Now, that's what we have on Hastert, but the open window is essentially the Franklin scandal, right? And I brought that up because you see this pattern of taking advantage of younger children, or at least in Hastert's case, younger people, but these other ones, younger children. And we also see the Bush connection. Now, if you go back to the Franklin scandal that took place in the late 1980s, even into the early 1990s, there was a book that I recommend that people read by John W. DeCamp. It's called The Franklin Cover-Up, that I highly encourage people to pick up. You can find it for about $10 on Amazon used. One of the people, this scandal, for people that don't know, revolved around satanic ritual abuse, children in the Omaha area who were not related to one another. In other words, they didn't have contact between one another to make up these stories, had reported that they were abused sexually, that they were tortured, that they were actually flown across the state, across the country. Even in one person's case, Paul Bonacci claimed that he was flown to Germany, where they were forced to take part in satanic rituals. They were sexually abused. And others reported that they were part of a mind control program. Right? Now, that, if you think about the reports of that back in the late 1980s, you would see a lot of people would have been shocked to even hear these things put out in terms of discussion. Now, the Franklin scandal was initially opened up because of the Franklin Credit Union that was run by Larry King, not the Larry King from CNN, but the Lawrence E. King, who was head of the Franklin credit union, where it turns out there was money coming in from all kinds of large banks. There was some drug laundering money that was going through as well, all kinds of illegal, faulty bank practices, and the Franklin Credit Union went belly up. There were congressional investigations into this, but at the same time, there were girls who were and boys who were in a foster home, the foster home belonging to the Webbs. And these children had escaped numerous times, and each time they would tell stories of being abused physically, sexually, and forced to take part in strange rituals. And nobody would believe them because the Webbs were respectable people around the Omaha area. Eventually, a social worker managed to get these children out of the Webb home. But even at the same time, there were other children who were telling the same stories, similar stories about other people, that they were being forced to go to parties, engage in these satanic ritual abuse rituals, and that they were being sexually abused. Alicia Owen was one of them, and then again Paul Bonacci. And again, these children didn't have – these weren't a group of friends who could have created some kind of weird – fantastic story and then perpetrated a hoax. These kids were quite separate from one another. When they were interviewed, for instance, Paul Bonacci, who had by virtue of the abuse he'd suffered, he had come down with multiple personality disorder, and this is what they called it at the time. And they, in order to find out information from him, they would have to access these different personalities. And one of his personalities spoke fluent German, putting him, you know, kind of corroborating the fact that he had been flown to Germany for an extended period to be used in rituals there. There was also the fact that one of his personalities could only write backwards, and he would write out a statement, and you'd have to hold it up to a mirror for you to be able to read what he wrote. So he gave quite a bit of information, and some of the information was that, you know, not only were majorly important people in the Omaha area involved in these satanic rituals, but that people from all across the state were involved as well. And as they investigated this issue, they found that the amount of people at these parties, there were a lot of very high profile people coming from Hollywood, from government. And in fact, one of the people that were pointed out at one of these parties was George Bush Sr. He was present at these parties that were thrown by Larry King that involved the prostitution of young children and led to satanic ritual abuse. So there's the apparently the Bush apple didn't fall far from the tree with Jeb helping to cover up the abuse of children in the Hastert scandal. But you know, all of this I would encourage people to take a look at in DeCamp's book because it's so much more detailed than that. I would hasten to point out, too, that you know, people like Michael Aquino, Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino, is now retired allegedly from the U.S. Army, who also co-authored a paper called Mind War with General Paul Ivalele. Michael Aquino is an avowed Satanist. He was the founder of the Temple of Set. He was implicated not only in the Franklin scandal as abusing children and satanic rituals, but also in a book by Noreen M. Gosh, who was the mother of a young boy named Johnny Gosh, who was abducted in Iowa back in the early 80s, who was apparently also put through these prostitution, sex slavery rings for children and put through satanic ritual abuse. He was actually seen by Paul Bonacci. Paul Bonacci was able to give this information about him years later when he was being deposed in the Senate and House investigations in Nebraska. So there's a book out by Noreen M. Gosh, and it's called Why Johnny Can't Come Home, and that's pretty expensive. It's hard to find. It's a rare book, but there's information there about him as well. He was also implicated in the Presidio scandal, the Presidio U.S. Army Station in San Francisco. Aquino was apparently he was implicated in massive sexual abuse of young children. Right, there was in August of 1987, the San Francisco police were forced to raid Aquino's home, and they had to raid the home because there was allegations that the house had been the scene of a rape of a 4-year-old girl. And the person who had been the prime suspect in that rape was a Baptist minister named Gary Hambright. He was actually indicted in September of the same year on the charges that he committed lewd and lascivious acts with 6 boys and 4 girls going from the age from 3 to 7 during September to October 1986. At the time, he was employed as at the child care center, and I'm talking about Hambright, on the U.S. Army base at Presidio. There were at least 58 separate incidents that were reported regarding child sexual abuse in that area. Now, one of the victims in 1987 in the Presidio scandal had identified Michael Aquino and his wife Lilith as participants in raping a child. And apparently, according to the victim, at least the Aquinos had filmed scenes of a child being abused by Hambright and had kept that video, apparently. So the police came in. They were able to obtain a search warrant. The description of Aquino's house that was provided by the victim was so detailed that the police were able to obtain a search warrant and go there, raid the home. They confiscated 38 videotapes, photo negatives, and a bunch of other evidence that the house had been sort of the hub of a pedophile ring. Now, Aquino, who denies this, he and his wife were never indicted in the incident. Aquino claimed that he had been in Washington at the time, but he admits that he went back and forth to the house regularly. There was a 10-count indictment against Hambright, the Baptist minister that was involved here, that was dropped by U.S. Attorney Joseph Russianello. And Russianello was implicated in covering up the links between the Nicaraguan Contras and South American cocaine trafficking organizations as well. He also had connections to other individuals who were implicated in these crimes. So that essentially is the Franklin cover up and the satanic ritual abuse system in a nutshell. But again, let me just run through a fact, Tim, and I'll wrap up and let you jump in here. But a lot of these kids, like Paul Bonacci, for instance, had reported multiple personality disorder. And one of the ways that an individual can come down with multiple personality disorder, which is now referred to as DID instead of MPD, dissociative identity disorder, but one of the ways individuals can come down with this is, of course, through extreme torture and sexual abuse. This is usually a cause of multiple personality disorder. And the overwhelming majority of people who have multiple personality disorder came by their disorder due to the fact that they were tortured or sexually abused. Now, out of those people, 85% of them report satanic ritual abuse. 85%. Now, are we going to kid ourselves and say that this is some type of mass delusion for people with MPD? If you think of all the people who have reported with MPD, right? The fact is that this stuff is much more common than certainly the media would report. It's much more common than even the alternative media might want to report. It's quite common. These networks are well established. And if you read the DeCamp book, what you'll see is that not only were efforts being hampered into the investigation by certain individuals, right, but they were being hampered on virtually every level. The police chief in Omaha, Robert Wadman, scuppered the investigation initially. When that investigation was turned over to the FBI, individuals in the FBI shut the investigation down. When that investigation was passed on to the state's attorney general's office, the state's attorney general's office shut it down. Apparently, George Bush Sr. was very interested in seeing this issue go away, and of course, we can guess why he would be interested in seeing it go away. But the fact that these networks existed to stop an investigation is extremely important to understand as well, because it wasn't just the law enforcement community, right? Because individuals in the media, the Omaha newspapers, most of the Omaha newspapers would refuse to cover the issue, and when they did so by claiming that the victims were part of a carefully crafted hoax. In fact, at the grand jury proceedings, the grand jury was stacked with people who had animosity toward the victims and were friends with the perpetrators. And the only people who were ever indicted over the Franklin scandal were Alicia Owen and Paul Bonacci, the two victims. Right? They got 15 years in prison, the victims. None of the perpetrators even went to trial, to my knowledge, about this, but the victims went to prison. And you see this going through a number of other places, right? The Boys Town, major orphanage in Omaha, outside Omaha, was one of the organizations that was responsible for providing children to people like Larry King. And again, I want to specify it's not the CNN host, but Lawrence King. So they were responsible for providing children. There was massive sexual abuse of these children going on at Boys Town, and Boys Town actually gave Dennis Hastert an award for some type of Humanitarian of the Year, which is a very rare award to give someone from Boys Town. So there's connections. Once you go down this rabbit hole, you'll find that there's really no stopping.
That award from Boys Town is really unfortunate, considering how Boys Town was implicated in the Franklin scandal. You mentioned, well, there's a lot of observations here I can make. One thing is Hastert's political rise seems to be linked to his own personal corruption, and there's a system, I think, that's built into the political system to make sure that the worst do get on top. And if you are compromised, the people that know about you, you become a useful tool for them. And so that might explain Hastert's meteoric political rise in the 70s and 80s, because he was compromised and they're the ones that get promoted. I think it was I heard a story. Oh, what's her name? The most she wrote the most she wrote the book. She was the FBI Arabic speaker.
Sybelle Edmonds.
Sybelle Edmonds. I'm sorry, I couldn't get that name. She told a story. She was talking to an FBI agent one time, and he was involved in doing background checks on people who are appointed to the federal judiciary, and they have a list of names, and they're the ones that are really good and clean, the ones that are not so good, and ones that are really bad. And they were really interested in the ones that were bad, because the ones that were clean couldn't be controlled. The ones that were bad were the ones they wanted to promote, you know, to make sure that the people that do rise up through the ranks are able to be controlled. And that's kind of how that system works. James Corbett had a recent podcast regarding kakistocracy, and what that means in Greek is the rule of the worst. And
that's what we have.
Yeah, that's what we have. And he had a guest. It was a professor from Europe talking about some of the pedophile scandals, organized pedophilia. And he theorized that the organized pedophilia, one reason for it is to groom a future psychopath. That's when you mentioned the trauma-based mind control. Now, if you get a child at a young age and traumatize them with these things, you can turn them into psychopaths. And that's how they fill the stables of psychopaths, because psychopaths are only what, maybe 1% of the population, they say. And that's one way to get a reliable source, a reliable supply of psychopaths that you can then utilize, you know, throughout their life. And also, when you mentioned about Paul Bonacci with the alters, multiple personalities, that's eerily similar to the MKUltra program.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there is so much we can continue to discuss.
Except it's a rabbit hole. So,
in fact, a lot of these, even in the Franklin scandal, it was you know, reported that these children understood that some of these things were videotaped, right? Now, why would you videotape something that's a crime that could get you so much, jail time or punishment, disgrace, unless they were videotaping other people doing it, and they were using these videos to ensure the fact that they had a willing puppet, and no one who has ever videotaped raping and murdering a two-year-old child is ever going to get out of line as long as they know that videotape is out there. Obviously that person's a psychopath to begin with, but this is a person that's a blackmailable psychopath, and there's no danger that they're going to get off the reservation. There was indeed a number, a lot of these guys were aided in videotaping these incidents. In fact, a lot of the children reported that it was quite common to have either these rituals or these abusive situations videotaped. And that, of course, is indeed a blackmail operation. Mm-hmm. The multiple personality disorder, people like Paul Bonacci, it is related directly to MKUltra, because they were actually using these children for purposes, right? And the idea in MKUltra was that you could break off compartments of the mind through torture, and then there were other methods as well. There was heavy use of drugs and LSD and stuff like that, but you could break off compartments in the mind and then actually program those different compartments. And then these individuals who were in charge of MKUltra would then be able to access those compartments of the brain containing the program through some type of code word. And then, it's the same thing we have with Sirhan Sirhan, for instance. This is the early version of MKUltra, I guess, where an individual sees a woman in a red dress, and then the next thing he knows, he's on the floor with police on top of him, right?
That's the Manchurian Candidate program, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and there's also other ways that this could happen too. I mean, there's the possibility that an individual is their program is activated and they go out and commit a crime, and then they are in a virtually catatonic state. Look at Holmes, the Batman shooter. If you look at his behavior after he committed the crime, the guy looks like he's done. He's about to overdose on Quaaludes. Mm-hmm. An individual in that state of mind could not have committed the crimes he allegedly committed. So you look at that, and there's also the ability of someone after they committed a crime in this way to completely be scrambled, right? Where they start saying the most random, weird things, like Charles Manson, for instance, that will say something that's just seemingly logical, and then it takes a sharp left turn, so they're scrambled to the point where you can't ever tell if they're telling the truth, if they're telling a lie, if they're insane, or if what. So if they ever say the government did this to me, then that's juxtaposed to the statement they made about bats in their brains and all that kind of stuff. So
they're immediately discredited. Yeah.
Yeah, discredited, and they can't maintain any logical thoughts. So that's how it's. That's how it was done, at least in the old days of MKUltra, and I have a reason to believe that that's been vastly improved upon now in terms of the way they're able to do it, because that was declassified in the 70s about a program that was quite old. And I would hope that none of the listeners believe that the CIA simply abandoned a program that was as effective as it was. And, of course, a lot of musicians and actors and prominent people were involved in that program.
I was listening to a talk with Dave McGowan, and he was talking. He wrote the book on the weird scenes from the canyon, about the whole Laurel Canyon scene, and he gets into Hollywood and performers in general. And he was theorizing that actors themselves, if you look at acting back in the 30s, how it was stilted and very crude compared to acting today, and he was just kind of. Well, he was theorizing, he was speculating, but he was saying that the acting we see, the whole method approach to acting, is a form of some sort of MKUltra mind control. How these actors are so good because they actually begin to think that they are the people they play, which is why they unwound and had breakdowns and all. It's not just living in the spotlight; it's like they're under some sort of program.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people would be surprised. They should just do some. Spend a few hours Googling and see some of the famous people who are involved in the MKUltra. The odds of that many people, famous people, being involved in a secret CIA program are pretty low if it's going to be just a coincidence. Mm-hmm. So they should check that out. But Yeah, the situation that Paul Bonacci found himself in is where, yeah, they were absolutely victims of mind control techniques as well, because this is torture, it's sexual abuse, and it broke the mind off to a number of components. And apparently Bonacci somewhat overcame that. This is extremely difficult to treat, multiple personality disorder, but this satanic ritual abuse stuff is something that goes on all across the country, all across the world. Remember, apparently, and this is according to reports, that this Aquino had a satanic temple set up in Germany that was tied to Nazi paraphernalia and Nazi stuff as well. So
the whole military infrastructure would be very helpful for a group like this. And you're talking about child sex abuse. If you're in the military, of course, the Pentagon runs the largest child care service in the world. So,
right.
You know, so if you have access to that program, you have access to all those children. And wasn't there at the Presidio, I think the military responded by transferring all the parents that were affected by the kids were victimized. And if I recall properly, there was just an outrage that the daycare center was burned down by some of the parents.
I'm not sure about that. I know they moved Aquino.
Yeah,
they moved him.
Might be that mistaken was not, about that, but I thought I heard something like that at the Presidio. There was such a, and the army just covered it up.
Three separate investigations against Aquino.
And by the way, the kids came down with the victims, the children. They weren't just accusations. They had venereal diseases.
Yeah, they had herpes.
Yeah,
or chlamydia. And
in fact,
the military later on requested that the children get tested for HIV. They were willing to pay for testing for HIV because Hambright, the guy who couldn't get indicted or couldn't get convicted, Aquino's buddy, actually had HIV. So there you go.
And one interesting factor that I heard, I was listening to this new documentary on Kurt Cobain. Was it bleached or something? Washed and bleached or something? About the suspicions regarding Kurt Cobain and his death and whether it's a suicide or murder. But Courtney Love apparently was back in the 70s, was one of the children at the Presidio Daycare Center.
I did not know that. I know that there were, when she was very young, she says she had intercourse with Ted Nugent. so she's definitely a traumatized person, but
I don't want to laugh. But I know it's easy to dislike Courtney Love, but when I hear about her upbringing, I have nothing but pity. I've heard stories about her being a mule, a drug mule, and a prostitute for military people and things like that. So this kind of follows the same theme here.
Yeah, I didn't know that she was at the Presidio daycare. I'll have to go look up at that. And again, I should preface my comment about the Ted Nugent situation and say that this is something that I've heard floating around and I have done a bunch of research on it. So if it's not true, allegedly.
Even you mentioned John DeCamp, and one of his advisors during that investigation was a former Central Intelligence Director William Colby. I think William Colby, I think I heard John DeCamp saying William Colby kind of told him to back off the investigation at some point because he said there are some things you just can never solve or there are powers that be that you can never challenge. And that's just the way the world works. That was his advice to John DeCamp, if I recall.
Yeah, it was his advice to John DeCamp. And I would say about, William Colby, Colby, I believe, was one of the head implementers of the Phoenix program in Vietnam. So
so was Aquino. Aquino was involved in that.
Right. So I would, I don't tend to look at William Colby as some type of American hero.
Some people have questioned his involvement in that and, of course, his strange death. And maybe he might have been too open or not. Or back in the, he spilled what they called the family jewels back in the 70s and, of course, was replaced by who? George Bush.
George Bush.
So it's very
interesting.
It's kind of how you wrap this all together because the child sex abuse, organized pedophilia, mind control. And when you talk about MKUltra, that was an umbrella program for I think as many as like 150 different programs. One was Manchurian Candidate. One was some of this trauma-based mind control to create couriers and mules and agents. And some was like involved in mass mind control. That would be the LSD program. And they probably moved on to psychotronic warfare. And that's what I think when you mentioned that General Vallely.
Vallely.
And he co-authored this paper with Michael Aquino about Psy War, psychological warfare, targeting, you know, the world, including the American people.
Yeah, indeed. And they actually mention extremely low frequencies and that basically what we would consider HARP technology today. Mm-hmm. They mention this stuff in the Mind War document. In fact, that document is called From Psyop to Mind War, The Psychology of Victory, which you can find. I linked to it in my article. But they talk about psychotronic means of controlling the minds of the general population. They want to go beyond the idea of just using print media or bullhorns, you know, the traditional type of, you know, we're attacking you, but we're not attacking you, we're your friends type of propaganda, or the traditional American propaganda of, you know, the old World War II songs, over there, you know. They want to go through to more effective means, to where it's not just goading people into doing something, but it's helping them to making them believe that they came to their own conclusions. And not only that, helping them to believe that it's inevitable. That's the big thing about mind war, is that it helps, it forces the victim to believe that the outcome that the propagators is inevitable. It's this air of inevitability, because if you believe it's inevitable, you're not going to resist it, and because what's the point? So they mention this over and over in the document. Of course, Aquino later on says that he reissued the paper and had an introduction to it, and he's done interviews where he says that he doesn't believe that, you know, people have misinterpreted it, that he wasn't saying that it should be used against the American people, but he does say that in the document, and or at least he strongly implies it in the document, which you can read for free. Just click on the link to my articles, and you'll find the document there, and you can read it for yourself. It's pretty telling. Now, Vallely, for instance, was a part of the implementation of that mind war philosophy, because remember when we were planning to go into Iraq, and the lies that Saddam was supporting Al-Qaeda, that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction, were being purveyed on media outlets, particularly Fox News. Paul Vallely was a commentator on Fox News. He was the retired military retired military general, but he wasn't retired. He was getting paid by the Pentagon to go on there and make claims that, from his professional opinion, that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, that he was harboring Al-Qaeda. He even made the most ridiculous claim that Osama bin Laden was hiding out in Iran, and that Iran was harboring Osama bin Laden. That was absurd. That's stupid, because Iran is the is Shiite, right? Because they're not going to harbor the Sunni bin Laden terrorist. But
Iranians, Iraqis, Arabs, they're all the same, right?
As long as it's in the Middle East.
Yeah, it's over there.
So, you know, he was promoting this idea, this propaganda idea. He went to Iraq and said that there were, you know, it was going very well, and he reported that on Fox News, and it was time for the surge. He went and said it was a bloodbath and they needed a surge. But what I'm saying is it's important to see that, because this was the implementation of mind war tactics through the media, using Pentagon, CIA-type assets through the media, which is well known, Operation Mockingbird, for instance, that this is done. They were using these assets through the media to promote an agenda, which was the invasion of Iraq. And it was one of the individuals who helped write the Mind War propaganda paper to begin with Michael Aquino.
Mm-hmm. And okay, getting back to the Franklin scandal and how it influences, or at least its political significance. You alluded to it, but in 1989, the Washington Times ran a front page article about a call boy's call boy ring operating out of the White House, having visits in the White House. And it was supposed to be a series of stories that were apparently shut down. It was only one appeared one time, I think, in the spring or summer of 1989. And that was eventually linked to this Franklin scandal. What was interesting was, I think, Lawrence King, he would fly kids to Washington, D.C., where they would entertain people at Craig Spence's mansion on Capitol Hill. And that mansion was wired for audiovisual by some agency. And that's how the political system is controlled.
Well, the word on the street in Washington is any type of sexual act goes, any type of deviancy goes, as long as you don't get caught. And of course, in Washington, D.C., if you're involved in any kind of high society or high politics or intelligence or anything, you've been caught. You just better play ball so you won't get shut down. But yeah, that call boy ring that went through Washington, went through the White House. I think it was like a midnight tour of the White House when Bush was there. And the question was, how did this happen? How did these child prostitutes walk through the White House and entertain people at the White House without Bush knowing? Or did he know? And yeah, you're right. I believe the stories got shut down after the first one.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you're looking for the story, I believe the only thing you can really find are photographs of the newspaper, right? I don't think you can really even find the actual link posted up anywhere. But these children were flown not just to Washington, D.C., but out to California, to Colorado, to other places across the country for the political elites, for the military elites, for the banking elites and so forth to have their way with them. And, one of the children, again, had reported that there was actually a snuff film created where a child was tortured and killed on video and then eaten. So,
That's the trouble with this stuff. It's so disturbing that most people don't even want to agree that it's even entertain the idea that it's possible. And so it goes on. People think this is so out of left field for people who believe in the textbook view of politics. they can't really wrap their head around it because it's so far out there.
Well, even in 2015, people think that things like MK Ultra are conspiracy theories
or Hollywood stuff. Yeah, they don't realize. Yeah.
So try to tell them that there's a network of satanic pedophiles running the country.
that involved George Bush, the Bush family,
right?
The Bush family are involved in cocaine smuggling. They're like, what?
Well, and that is absolutely documented.
Yeah,
too. That I can't stress that enough. That's no conspiracy theory at all.
Wasn't Bush flying around in what's his name's plane after he was shot dead in the airport or down in Louisiana? What was his name? The CIA pilot.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about, but I can't remember.
His name's failing me now. He was gunned down by the Cali cartel gunmen, and apparently Oliver North is the one that set him up.
I, the name escapes me as well. I mean, the whole Bush family goes back many years for drug running and stuff. So,
he was part of Operation 40 and all that stuff. So, his name pops up in the Kennedy assassination, JFK assassination. That was
Right. I believe his family was even going back much further than that, were involved in the Opium War.
Oh, yeah. Well, Prescott Bush, Skull and Bones, all that stuff. So there you go. You said it is a rabbit hole. that's what they call it. But just more recently, we had this Jeffrey Epstein case. And, he down in Florida, where apparently he was apex child predator, where he was trafficking in young girls as young as 12, and he only went to jail for 13 months of an 18-month sentence and was let out. And jail was, I think, nighttime in the local jail. He got to spend most of his day in his mansion down there. And apparently his house was wired, apparently, according to local police officers, investigators down there. And that investigation was quashed, too. So.
Well, even, I did an article
back. Oh, sorry, it's Barry Seal.
Barry Seal, that's the guy. That's the
Barry Seal. Look up the life and times of Barry Seal. He had George Bush's personal phone number in his car.
George Bush's phone number has appeared in some very interesting places. Yeah. Remember, it wasn't George Bush's number, but it was, I think, maybe his brother's or his somebody closely related to him who Hinckley had in his jacket pocket.
They were going to have
a family member.
George Bush's George H.W. Bush's son was going to have dinner with Hinckley's brother the night after the assassination. And, of course, the Hinckleys were business partners with the Bushes.
Right.
And that was reported one time in two newspapers, and that was it.
Well, I know we're closing in on the time limit here. But I wanted to tell people also that I've done an article back in 2012 about the Jimmy Savile was another window into this massive pedophilia network. And Jimmy Savile had extremely close relationships with Prince Charles and the royal family. And I think that if people take a look at that, these things were brought out in the open after Jimmy Savile was dead. And there was no hope of actually punishing him or anything. But you notice that every time there is the revelation of a pedophile scandal in relation to the Jimmy Savile circle, it gets lower and lower on the totem pole. It never moves up. But this guy was so trusted by the royal family that he was invited into the homes of the royal family. And then he even said that he worked deep cover for the royal family. So this guy had I think close connections with a number of people in the in the royal family, and of course the Lord Mountbatten royal family member was a notorious pervert and sexual abuser as well. So that whole family has a history of that. So that's another example. You go just go over to England, and you have your other network of pedophiles as well. And I have no doubt that they're entirely connected.
Yeah, he also was good friends with Lady Thatcher.
Apparently the Thatcher's God, was it? My mind is not working as well as it should tonight. But I don't know if it was the Thatcher's chief of staff.
Chief of staff was pedophile.
Yeah, it was a pedophile, and so it's amazing how many pedophiles are in at such high places of government and industry and banking. It's just
kakistocracy.
Inordinate amount of
rule the worst. And there's also, I think it was George Bush's national security advisor. What was his name? But he became the ambassador to South Korea too. He was also a pedophile. Name fails me right now. He went on to be the ambassador to North Korea, so he was promoted and rewarded. But again, what we're dealing with is a network and a system. Not only is it to satisfy the perverted sexual appetites of a corrupt elite, political elite, it's there, it serves a certain political function because whether it's honey traps or getting these people on a film with young girls or boys, the intelligence agencies and the powers behind the intelligence agencies are able to manage the political class, which really are just a managerial class for the elite. And that way they can make sure they're on a leash. And, if you want to wonder how that works, just watch The Godfather Part 2 and what happened to the character of Senator Mark Geary, where he's providing Godfather Part 2, he's kind of proving some sort of opposition to Michael Corleone, and eventually he ends up in a bordello with a dead girl beside him. That's all on film, and the Corleones help him out of the problem. But of course, it's on film. From that point on, he's no trouble for him anymore. and that's how it works.
And the DC Madam issue, if you remember that, was another window into how that works as well.
Yeah, and she, of course, her operation was she shut down her operation, and that's when she got in legal trouble. Because it turns out the FBI was using her operation she was an asset, but they were using her operation so they could get the goods on people.
Right.
Not to prosecute them, to manage them.
Right.
So that's what people have to realize. This isn't because they want to arrest these people for breaking a crime, for violating the Mann Act or whatever. It's to keep them under control. And that's how this whole – I think that's one dimension.